Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper. Today is Wednesday, March the 9th in the year 2011 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tonight's topic, the importance of emotion in understanding and managing ADHD. We're thrilled to be interviewing Dr. Russell A. Barkley on the topic. We had hoped to interview Dr. Barkley live. However, due to his busy schedule, we needed to pre-record the show and air it now. So without further ado, here is my interview with Dr. Barkley. I'm sure you'll find it very insightful.
Before we get into the meat of the show, just a few reminders for our iTunes listeners out there. You can preview upcoming episodes, and you can actually download archive episodes by going to attentionradio.com. For our iTunes listeners and anyone else out there who's not one of those people who likes to check websites for schedules, if you go to attentionradio.com and sign up for our newsletter, we will send our schedule directly to your inbox. Again, that's attentionradio.com. It's Attention Talk Radio without the talk. So everyone keep that in mind. We have a very busy schedule today in the big show, so let's jump into things today. With us today is Dr. Russell Barkley, and he's a world-renowned authority on attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, having spent his entire professional career studying ADHD, its diagnosis, assessment, and management. He's received numerous citations for excellence in his research and opinions on ADHD and is highly esteemed by his other professionals in the field. His expertise has garnered many awards for his work in ADHD field in psychology. He's the author of numerous books, including titles such as Your Defiant Teen, 10 Steps to Resolve Conflict and Rebuild Your Relationship, Your Defiant Child, 8 Steps to Better Behavior, Taking Charge of ADHD, the revised edition, the complete authoritative guide for parents with ADHD, or for parents, excuse me. And recently, just released is, Taking Charge of Adult ADHD, which can be found in most major bookstores. I would go on in more detail about his bio because literally I could probably do a whole show on it. And what I would like to point everyone out to is if you go to his website, that's russellbarkley.org, and click on About, you can find extensive information on his background and expertise. But I do want to reiterate that he's world-renowned authority on the topic. So with that, Dr. Barkley, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm glad to have the opportunity to speak to your listeners.
Before we kind of get into things a little bit, too, I was just kind of going through some stuff. Can you just comment? We have a few more books that you're releasing here imminently in the next couple months. Could you just share the titles?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. Actually, besides the Taking Charge of Adult ADHD that came out last summer, coming up in the next few weeks will be several rating scales I've developed for use in evaluating adults with ADHD, including not just their symptoms, but executive functioning, emotional self-control, which we'll be talking about today, of course, and also various domains of impairment. So there'll be three rating scales that will be looking at those three areas of adult functioning, and clinicians will probably find those to be quite useful in the assessment of clinical referrals that come to them with ADHD as a concern. And then I have a new book on executive functioning that should be out later in the spring or summer, which is more of a scholarly review, but also it builds upon a new theory of ADHD that I started back about 10 years ago, and this is just a further elaboration and clarification of that model. So that's one I think that professional audiences or people interested in the history of executive functioning might find interesting.
Excellent, excellent. So just to kind of tee this up, everyone, Dr. Barkley was a keynote speaker at the last CHAD conference back in November, and in his talk he was talking about emotion, and I was so moved by it because and today's a little bit different from our normal formats. The purpose of the day is really to provide him a platform to share his position on emotion in the context of ADHD, specifically the role of emotion and how it can explain so many things that our current view of ADHD doesn't explain. And as everybody knows out there, one of the functions of the show is we like to say what's obvious is a function of what you're paying attention to. And as he emphasizes the need to pay attention to emotion in the context of ADHD, I think it really can kind of change not only the way we look at it, but also how we actually find solutions. So I guess to begin, Dr. Barclay, can you talk to us, and really let's start at the beginning. What is an emotion?
Yes, well, I'm glad to ask about this this whole topic, Jeff, because as you know, emotion has been ignored in our view of ADHD now for some time. But to begin with, an emotion is a very short-term change in the state of our body and of our mind, and it's usually comprised of about three things that interact with each other. One is simply our level of arousal. We experience a change in our heart rate and our blood pressure and our breathing. So that we find ourselves in a more active state than we were, say, just a few seconds or a few minutes ago. But besides that kind of physiological arousal, there's also an evaluative part of an emotion, which has to do with our evaluating whether what has just happened is either threatening or reinforcing to us. And that evaluative part of the emotion then leads to a change in our behavior, whether or not we pursue an approach what it is that we found interesting or rewarding, or whether we withdraw from something that we find threatening to us. So it's those three gradients that form what we report as feeling that we have an emotion. But they're very, very important for human survival because they rapidly evaluate what is happening around us and cause us to pay attention to them and then change our behavior as a function of that paying attention. So you could basically break down any emotional experience into four stages, and they can happen within a matter of milliseconds, but it helps separate them because later we're going to talk about how you might be able to alter your problems with emotion and problems with regulating these emotional states. So these four steps are, first of all, there's a situation, an event that happens to us. That's immediately followed by what you've already mentioned, and that is you've paid attention to it. So there's an attention component to emotion besides the situational part of it. The third thing is that you appraise it, you evaluate it, you've thought about it in some way, and then finally you react, and that's the emotional reaction that you experience. But those four steps, the situation, the attention, the evaluation, and then the response or the reaction can be split apart, and it really helps in managing your emotions to think of it as a four-step process. Because it's through those four steps that we're going to try to get a handle on this.
So this is fascinating to me. So it's I mean, this is all almost instantaneous. But you're in a situation, you pay attention to it, you kind of appraise what's kind of going on, and you react to what you react to it or what you think you should do as a result of it, which I'm hearing manifests in behavior.
Yes, that's right. Now, that's how emotions play out in everybody, including non-human species. It's not just humans that have emotions. Those four things happen. What humans have is there is a second layer to this whole system in which we are monitoring ourselves because humans have self-consciousness, self-awareness. And so we're monitoring these emotions as they play out, and that second level gives us the ability to step in to that automatic first level that I just described and be able to do something about those emotions. No other species can do that because no other species is self-aware to the extent that we are, and therefore we can self-manage these emotions if we choose to. And so there's a second higher level to our emotions, and it's also comprised of a four-step process. The first is simply the ability to inhibit the automatic level, this automatic reaction to events. So that instead of just allowing ourselves to be at the mercy of our environment and our feelings, humans have the ability to actually intervene. And the first thing they do to intervene is they stop. They inhibit the strong emotional behavior and reaction. And then the second thing they do is they try to calm themselves down. They self-soothe, self-calm, and otherwise try to down-regulate this sort of strong emotion that's overtaken them. The third thing they do, as befits your show, by the way, is they refocus their attention away from the event itself. They may distract themselves, they may look away, they may close their eyes or even cover their eyes if it's a very powerful event, but in some way they're going to divert their attention away from that stimulating event. And then finally, they're going to organize a new emotion, a new experience to replace the old one. And this new emotion they're going to generate is going to be much more consistent with their long-term goals, their welfare, what they hope to achieve. And if I could just have a moment, I'll give you an example. If you and
yeah,
I are
ahead.
In a business meeting and I said something to you that was humiliating or insulting, if you didn't have this second level of emotional self-control, you might automatically leap across the desk and begin to throttle me because I've humiliated you in front of our peers. But you do have this ability. And so what you might do is, even though this reaction is building in you, you will go through these four steps that we've talked about. You'll inhibit that initial urge to come over across the table and throttle me. Then you're going to start to talk to yourself and calm yourself down and watch your breathing. Then maybe you're going to look away from me and think about something else and count to 10 and go to your happy place.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, that evaluation is going to lead you to substitute a different emotion, one that's more reasonable, because you've evaluated the fact that you don't want to lose your job, you don't want to get arrested for assault, and you know, you want to be able to keep this source of employment going, and therefore you're going to substitute a more constructive emotion in its place. And those are the two steps that we believe ADHD interferes with. It interferes, first of all, with the ability to inhibit that strong emotion, and then secondly, these things we've talked about as far as self-regulating your emotions.
So with that being, with us having talked about what an emotion is, what I'm hearing is that one of the keys with ADHD is the ability to self-regulate in that emotion?
Yes. Well, actually, that's exactly what you're going to see. Because of the impulsiveness that ADHD creates in individuals, they're going to be less able to engage in that first step, which is to stop the emotion from playing out. Their emotions are going to be very impulsive, off the cuff, raw, unmoderated, thoughtless emotions as they play out. And, you know, that's okay if you're a child. It's forgivable. But as you get older, we expect people to have a more mature management of their emotions. And that's where it starts to get people into trouble, because the inability to manage that strong emotion has consequences for your work, for your social relationships, and so on. And then the second thing they find difficult is when the strong emotion has overcome them, doing these other steps we've talked about, self-soothing, self-calming, refocusing their attention, and then appraising the event differently so that they come up with a better emotion in place of the one that they initially were going to show, those are going to be hard for them as well, because the emotion is out of the gate.
And this is what's really powerful and why I thank you so much for coming on the show, is if we were paying attention to other things, we wouldn't necessarily know emotion. But by saying, hey, listen, emotion is a big piece of this, and this is what an emotion is, and these are the processes that we go to self-regulate. Knowing what those processes are, to me, is very powerful if you have ADD, and because you can feel that emotion in your body, like, wait a second, pause, notice that you're going through that. And some of that stuff, it might be is like, I notice it's coming. This is a step in the process, and I know that I need to refocus my attention or to calm down a little bit. What coaching a lot is about is like, okay, what types of things in the past have enabled you to kind of calm down, and what has allowed you to refocus in those situations? Because if you become conscious of it, then you begin to manage it, which is really powerful for me today. Is because if for your case of bringing emotion back, if we pay attention to it, it gives us so much more power. As working with those with ADHD, say, wait a second, I feel the emotion kind of coming on. Here's the process I've got to go through, and here's what I need to do in order to manage it and get to where I need to be for a different outcome.
Absolutely.
I tell you what, Dr. Clark, what I'd like to do is go to a break real quick, and then when we come back, I'd like to hear some of your reasons and arguments why emotion should be considered.
Okay.
Before we do that, again, if people want to contact you, how do they reach you?
At my website through russellbarkley.org. There's a lot of information there. If that information doesn't answer their questions, then there's a contact button that they can use to email me directly. But there's a lot of fact sheets, international consensus statement, a lot of new materials on the website that people can find helpful.
Absolutely. So with that, we'll be right back.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
ADHD. Is it real? How is it diagnosed? How do I know if I have it or if my children have it? Do you outgrow it? You have questions and we have answers. We're CHAD, a national organization made up of professionals, parents, educators, and, of course, those with ADHD. So if you want real answers to your questions, join CHAD at www.chadd.org or call us at 800-233-4050.
This is your ADHD information station. Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
News, updates, and alerts sent right to your inbox. Sign up now at attentionradio.com.
Awareness of how your brain processes information and emotion is the key to self-management and success in today's world. I am an international ADD coach. Contact me, Susan McIntosh, at susanmcintosh.com to see and hear how you too can be a success.
I'm Jeff Copper, host of Attention Talk Radio, here to talk to you about CopyTalk.com, a voice dictation service. This is not just some voice dictation software. It's a real dictation service by people who type whatever you want. When I need to document something, all I do is hit speed dial on my cell or work phone and start speaking. The folks at CopyTalk will type it up and email it back to me that day. The best part is I can dictate as many 4-minute messages as I want, all for one flat monthly fee. Go to copytalk.com/ATR, enter Jeff Copper as the referrer's name, and sign up for the free trial account today. If you tell them I sent you, then you'll get $20 off the monthly subscription for as long as you keep the service.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everyone, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. With us today is Dr. Russell Barkley, and we're talking about the importance of emotion in understanding and managing ADHD. Dr. Barkley, before the break, we talked about what emotion was and emotion, self-regulating emotion. Can you speak to now a little bit of, I think you call it the 7 lines of evidence that you believe that kind of helps create an argument that emotion should be brought back into the diagnosis and the management of it?
Certainly. I'll try to be brief, and let me take each of these at one point in time. But the most important at the beginning is to understand that emotion has always been a part of the history of ADHD, going back to the first medical paper on the subject in 1798. People don't realize that the history of ADHD is over 200 years old and that articles and chapters in medical textbooks were being written even in the late 1700s. And throughout, from 1798 all the way up through 1968, everyone always considered emotion to be one of the key or core ingredients of ADHD. It wasn't just the fact that they were inattentive and distractible, or that there was some hyperactivity involved, or that they were impulsive. Also included in here was this difficulty with managing emotion. And yet in 1968, the concept of emotion was stripped out of the way we think about ADHD. And ever since then, all of our diagnostic criteria have simply focused on the other three symptoms, the inattentiveness, the hyperactivity, and the impulsiveness. And if emotion was mentioned at all, it was usually mentioned only as a byproduct in some people, or as a comorbid disorder, a coexisting disorder, so it was due to something else. But it certainly wasn't viewed as central to the disorder. And what I've been trying to do in the past year through my scientific articles and so forth, and presentations like you heard at CHAD, is to bring emotion back into its rightful place as part of this disorder, where it was for, 160-some years before it got stripped out. And it needs to be put back in again.
So it was for the life of our knowledge of ADD, it's been there for most of the time, and it was just, in relative terms, just recently taken out.
That's right. And the reasons why it was taken out are unclear. It may have had to do with the fact that emotion was hard to manage, or hard to measure, rather, and psychiatry and psychology were trying to become scientific and trying to measure human behavior and reactions. There may have been some politics involved in it. I don't know. But what I do know is that starting with 1968, the official manual for psychiatric diagnosis did not include emotion any longer in with ADHD, and I think that was a big mistake, and I'd like to see emotion returned, because the emotional stages that we talked about earlier, the impulsiveness of emotion and the self-regulation of emotion, fit exactly into the two dimensions of ADHD that we've already talked about. We've said that people with ADHD are impulsive. Well, you're not just impulsive in your behavior and your thoughts and in your words. You have to be impulsive in your emotions as well, because emotions are welded to everything we think, say, and do. And so for that reason, emotion would have to be here. And the second thing is that we know that the inattentiveness is part of ADHD, and that research now shows that that inattention arises from deficits in executive functioning. And executive functioning is just a fancy professional term for self-control. So if you have trouble with executive functioning or self-control, you ought to have trouble then self-regulating your emotions, not just your behavior, not just your thoughts, but your feelings as well. So it makes perfect sense to return emotion back onto these two dimensions that have been part of ADHD since 1968. But I want people to realize, though, that we're not just going to put them back into those dimensions, that the emotion needs to be recognized as an obvious component of ADHD in its own right.
Certainly, certainly. So share with us some of the other points.
I'd be glad to. The second reason emotion should be in ADHD has to do with our advances in understanding the neuroanatomy of ADHD. If we look at the brain and what parts of the brain are involved in ADHD, they are precisely the same parts of the brain that we know in normal individuals are involved in managing emotion.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, one of the most important circuits in ADHD is from the frontal lobes, especially the right frontal lobe, back through a area in the middle part of the brain known as the anterior cingulate, and then from there it goes to the inner emotional brain known as the limbic system. And that's a very old part of the brain that generates our feelings and emotions. So from the frontal lobe back into the limbic system is how our thoughts regulate our emotions and vice versa. And that's how we control how we feel about things.
Mm-hmm.
That's the executive system, the frontal lobe, reaching down into the brain and managing the emotional system, the limbic system.
So it was,
well,
it just
that
like,
network is part of ADHD, so it ought to be part of the emotional aspects of ADHD.
So you're talking like the brain anatomy, what's affecting emotion and affecting ADD are very similar?
They're identical, absolutely identical. The networks that are involved in ADHD, there are three networks. And one of those networks is the emotion regulation network. And so knowing that, we would know that emotion is a central part of this disorder. The other networks, I'll just briefly mention them. One is what I call the what network. It's where what you're thinking about controls what you do, and that's a separate network. And then there's the when network, which also involves the frontal lobe, but now the cerebellum, and that has to do with timing of your behavior, the timeliness of what you do and your ability to manage yourself relative to time. You can now see why people with ADHD have trouble with doing what they want to do, holding in mind what they want to do and doing it. That's the what network.
Uh-huh.
But also with the timing of their behavior and time management, which, as you know, in your profession, you know that that's a major deficit for adults with ADHD, is self-management relative to time and their schedules and deadlines. So these three networks explain an awful lot about ADHD, but as I said earlier, one of them is the emotion management network, and that's just another piece of evidence that emotion has to be part of this disorder. Now, a third line of evidence is the evidence itself. When we go out and we actually observe people with ADHD, or we have them fill out rating scales about their behavior, we find that they rate themselves as very emotional. And if we observe them in emotionally provoking situations, like things that might make you frustrated or angry, we know that we can observe in them much greater emotion and much more struggling with trying to downregulate that inappropriate emotion for them. So the evidence itself in a number of research papers shows that emotion is part of this disorder. It's not just a fiction. It's not just conjectural. It's actually seen in people with ADHD when we put them in emotionally charged situations. So that's another line of evidence that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And then another piece of evidence that I talk about is for a number of years now, we've known that ADHD predisposes people toward becoming oppositional, what we call oppositional defiant disorder, and OCD.
Uh-huh.
By putting emotion back in ADHD, you can automatically see the connection between the two, because ODD is a disorder of regulating your anger, your hostility, which
uh-huh.
is an emotion.
Yep.
And if you have trouble regulating your emotions, you're going to have trouble, of course, regulating anger, hostility, aggression, and frustration, and that's ODD. So you can see how ADHD would cause ODD in individuals, and that's a new idea. Previously, we just thought that these two disorders coexisted. This actually explains that one causes the other.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating.
Yes, thank you.
Some of the other points of evidence.
Yes. Well, I think when we look at the outcomes of people with ADHD, and as you know, Jeff, I've done a 25-year longitudinal study out in Milwaukee mm-hmm. with my colleague Mary Ellen Fisher, where we followed 158 ADHD children who are now in their late 20s and early 30s. And when we look at their life course and how they did in school and in work and in driving and managing money and these other domains of major life activities, we were able to go back into our data and look at whether or not the emotional symptoms they had when they were children and teenagers, whether those predicted certain outcomes. And we did that and compared it to, well, what about their inattentiveness? And what about their hyperactive and impulsive behavior? What did those predict? And what we were trying to show here is that emotion makes a unique contribution to our ability to predict how well people are going to do, apart from the two traditional symptom dimensions that we've talked about, the inattention and the hyperactive impulsive behavior. And here's what we found. I don't have time to go through all the data in these papers, but here's an important one. The single best predictor of whether you're going to be fired from a job and how many times you're going to be fired is not your inattentiveness, it's not your distractibility, it's not your forgetfulness or your hyperactivity or your impulsiveness, it's your emotions. Emotional impulsiveness and poorly regulated emotion was the single best predictor of how many times people got fired from work. It was also a predictor of road rage and driving under the influence and automobile accidents. Well beyond simply inattentiveness, emotion mattered. We also found that it was a big predictor of social problems, that people found that if they had trouble managing their emotions, they lost friends. Because just like employers, your friends will forgive you your distractions and your inattentiveness and even your restlessness. But if you're blowing up at them, if you're frustrated, if you're impatient with them, that's a little less easy to forgive, and it can cost you social relationships and even your intimate relationships, as in your marriage or your dating relationships. All of those were affected by the emotional aspect of ADHD.
That's just amazing. It's fascinating information, because as you've been talking about that, we're reflecting that our conversation before the break about what an emotion is in self-regulation, the ability to calm down, refocus, and come up with a new emotion. And if you don't do that, I can see how it can create a lot of problems and be a predictor of these problems. And you're saying that your research and evidence is tying that link together.
Yeah, very, very consistent with that. Now, there, if you have time, there are, I think, six things that people can do to help with this emotional component of ADHD. So, you know, when time permits, maybe we can just briefly go through those.
Certainly. Actually, as a matter of fact, is it okay if we run a little bit over right now, or are you on a tight time frame?
It's fine with me. I'd be glad to do so, Jeff. It's a very important topic.
No, and I love this discussion. This is going to be. I'm getting a lot of it, as I'm sure our users are. So some of the arguments so far is, number one, emotions was always there until it was taken out in the 60s. We got the neuroanatomy seems to kind of line up, the neuropsychology, the actual evidence that we're observing. Is there any other areas that we haven't touched on that would lend itself?
We talked about the actual psychological evidence out there as well. When you observe people with ADHD, guess what? They are more emotional. And then we've talked about the importance of ADHD in understanding comorbid disorders like oppositional disorder. And then, of course, there is predicting all these impairments that we've talked about as well. So all of these lines of evidence line up to emphasize that emotion is very important to understand as a key link in this disorder.
What would the argument be on the other side to say, no, emotion really shouldn't be put back in based off of what you're identifying?
Okay, well, one of the arguments, which I think we can easily counteract just with the evidence we have, but one argument might be, what's the point? It doesn't add anything new. We already know that ADHD involves these two dimensions of behavior, inattention and hyperactive impulsive behavior. And if that explains all of the problems that these people are having, if that accounts for their symptoms and their life course and their impairments, why put emotion back in? And, of course, as you already heard me say, because emotion brings value added. Emotion by itself, apart from these other two dimensions, interferes with certain aspects of our life, and it allows us to understand those impairments better. By putting emotion back in ADHD, we now understand why oppositional disorder is there and also why depression and anxiety start to become problems for people with ADHD the longer their disorder goes unmanaged. Whereas we wouldn't understand those links and those impairments if emotion was left out of our core thinking of the disorder. So I think we can easily respond to the argument that emotion shouldn't be put back in with these new lines of evidence that have become available.
And then just a plug here, you know, going back to the top of the show, one of the reasons why I think this is powerful is if you're not paying attention to emotion or even managing your emotions, your solutions and outcomes are going to be very, very different. Whereas if you're focused on that, particularly from a coaching perspective on my side, is that if we're focusing on, you know, how to calm down and how to refocus and how to form new emotions, at least at that point in time we're managing the area that's relating to some of these things, where if we don't acknowledge emotion, we might be managing something that's indirect and not actually having a direct input on the outcome. So I like that. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely. It's a good way to put it.
Is there any other arguments? No. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think there it helps then to understand that if emotion is part of ADHD, it would lead to at least six things that people can do to help manage this part of ADHD. Whereas if you didn't put emotion into ADHD, you wouldn't think about doing these things at all. You would just be thinking about managing your inattentiveness and your distractibility and your time management and organizational problems. And I don't mean to minimize those. Those are important deficits in their own right. But you wouldn't be putting so much emphasis on this emotional component. You wouldn't even realize it was there. In fact, you might wind up concluding that the person actually has a mood disorder and try to treat it through mood-altering drugs like antidepressants or anti-anxiety drugs, when in fact you've missed the point. That's not the cause of those emotional problems. You've misdiagnosed the patient, and you've mistreated them with the wrong medication because you thought the emotion was part of another disorder when, in fact, it actually was inherent in the ADHD itself.
I couldn't have said that. What you articulated was perfect. It makes a lot of sense. If we're focused on the right things, it'll work. I tell you what, I'd like to run to a break real quick, and then when we come back, can we talk about the six things that help?
Please.
Absolutely. So with that, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ari Tuckman, author of More Attention, Less Deficit, Success Strategies for Adults with ADHD. This is the only book actually written for adults with ADHD. Each chapter is divided into short articles, so you can read only the stuff you want in the order you want. I take lessons from the research and make them totally useful in your daily life. You can get a free PDF of the first chapter at adultadhdbook.com. Check it out.
Okay, let's be honest here. How many times have you forgotten the wet laundry in the washer and it started smelling a little funky, so you had to wash it again, maybe even twice, in the same week? Well, you may be an AD Diva just like me. I'm Linda Rogley, and I founded the AD Diva Network for women with ADD-ish tendencies, especially those of us 40 and better. The AD Diva Network is a great place for support, connection, and a touch of whimsy. You can join us at addiva.net. That's addiva.net.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention at attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone, to Attention Talk Radio. With us is Dr. Russell Barkman. We're talking about emotion, trying to pay attention to emotion and use it to serve to help those with ADHD. Dr. Barkley, can you talk about the six things, the six areas that result of this that can help?
Yes, I think that if we think about these six things, they're going to make sense once I explain them to you. So bear with me here. It could take me just a minute or two to get all of this out. But step number one is realize that the ADHD medications may help manage some of these emotional difficulties, not all of them, but some of them. For instance, if the emotional part of the brain is not being regulated properly by this frontal lobe, and your ADHD medications are going into these areas and increasing the ability of the frontal lobe to manage the emotional system, you might find that your ADHD medications are beneficial to this impulsive part of emotion, this quickness with which the emotion is up and out and not inhibited. Now, as I explained at the CHAD conference, the different ADHD medications will do this through different means. They don't all do it identically, and they don't all do it well. So just understand that you may need to talk with your physician if you're on medication about, is this the right medication for managing the emotional piece of it? And if you're not on medication or you're considering going on it, keep in mind that this might be one of the advantages of the medication. It's not just that it helps you concentrate or that it helps you to be less impulsive and less hyperactive. It may also help you regulate your emotions and keep you from showing these impulsive emotions. So, number one, ADHD meds can help benefit certain parts of this emotional problem that people with ADHD have. Now, the other five things are psychological strategies that anybody can use, whether they're on medication or not. And they go back to the four stages of an emotion that we talked about right at the top of the show, Jeff.
Uh-huh.
For instance, we talked about the fact that an emotion begins with a situation. Something happens. Well, step two in managing your emotions is to select the right situation and don't put yourself in situations that are likely to provoke strong emotions. Don't just go about your life being pulled hither and yon without any particular forethought or plan in mind. If you know, for instance, that a particular setting, a particular context, maybe there's a particular bar that you like to go to after work on Fridays for happy hour, but you know that that's a problem for you because there's a couple of people there that you don't get along with and that you usually tend to get in arguments with these people, you know, don't go to that bar. Find a different place to have your beer and your happy hour. In other words, select the situation so that it doesn't provoke the emotions that you know are going to occur in alternative situations that you could have gone into. Now, you can't always do that, but many times you can, especially if you've repeatedly encountered problems in that situation. Then step one is don't go there. Avoid that situation if at all possible. So we call this situation selection, and it is step one in managing your emotional health.
Okay.
Step two is, what happens if I find myself in a situation where I'm becoming emotional? Okay, I wasn't able to select myself out of this. I find myself here. What do I do? This is where we modify the situation. We change the structure of the situation. For instance, you and I were talking about being in a business meeting where I may have said something that was very insulting or humiliating to you. One of the things that you can do in a situation like that is to look away from the individual, sit away from that individual, turn and look at somebody else and start talking to them, push your chair back away from the table, perhaps stand up, go to the coffee machine, get a coffee, come back into the room again, so that you can modify the structure of that situation by where you sit, by where you look, and by what you choose to do that might help to calm that emotion down a little bit before you react to what the other person has said. So change the situation. Sometimes you can also change it by simply leaving, as you heard me just say. Just buy yourself some time. Get a break. You know, a one-minute break to get a drink of water is not an insult to anybody. And then after you got that, you can come back in. But it gives you that 1 to 2 minutes to get a hold of yourself and get back in the situation. Now, the next thing that you can do after situation modification is how you deploy your attention. What you think about and where you look. So as we said, you can divert your eyes away from the person who's upsetting you. You can close your eyes if you need to. You can turn and look out the window. You can look at a piece of art in the room and, you know, try to analyze your feelings about the art. But get your attention system away from the provocative event itself. And we call that attention deployment, where you deploy your attention to something different than what is provoking the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So to repeat, we've got situation selection, choosing situations that are healthy for you rather than ones that lead to emotional difficulties. The second is modifying the situation. And the third is changing what you're attending to, what you're looking at. Now, let's suppose none of that works. All right, well, the next thing we call cognitive change, and I know you use this a lot in your business as well, and this is where how you think about the emotion can literally change the emotion. This is where you evaluate whether this is really an important event or not to you. You might say to yourself, for instance, in the situation you and I had set up where, you know, I've said something insulting, you might say to yourself, well, this guy's not important to me. What the heck does he know what he's talking about?
Yep.
You know, he's just another guy in the room, and he's not my boss, and who does he think he is anyway? I mean, these are self-statements you can be saying in your head that can help calm you down, because you're going to reappraise the situation in its importance to make it less important than it may have seemed at the beginning. So there's a cognitive element to this where, as you know, your emotions are partly determined by what you think.
Yep.
And if you alter your thoughts, you literally can alter the consequent emotions that come out of that. And then finally, the last step in this process is where you modify the emotion itself. It's already overtaken you. There's not much you can do about it. You can't leave the situation. So now what you can do, focus on your breathing. If you've ever had any sort of meditation training, and it doesn't have to be religious or Buddhist meditation, just standard meditation training, or even if you've had practice in what we call deep muscle relaxation, you'll remember the old Jacobson muscle relaxation techniques where you focus on your breathing, you focus on your heart rate, you tense and relax different muscle groups, and by doing that, you can begin to de-stress the situation and maybe temper the emotion. Now, what's important here, Jeff, to understand is that the later in this sequence you wait, the harder it is to do it and the less successful it's likely to be.
Absolutely.
You're better off choosing your situations wisely. Remember, we talked about situation selection. Than you are trying to modify the strong emotion once it's already out of you. So the earlier in this whole sequence of steps we've talked about, the better. So to repeat, you've got six things to do. One, check out the right medications, make sure you're on the right ones, and see if they help with your emotions. Two, choose situations wisely. If you know that a situation gets you in trouble emotionally, try to avoid it. Three, if you can't modify that situation in some way so that it's less emotional for you, where you sit, who you talk to, who you look at, and so on. Next one, make sure you deploy your attention properly. As you've said at the beginning of the show, it's what you pay attention to. And if you divert your attention away from the emotional provoking event, that'll help. Next, reappraise the importance of the situation for yourself. Hopefully that will downregulate the emotion. And then finally, if you have to, do some stress management, deep muscle relaxation, little meditation to address the emotion itself.
Dr. Barclay, what's I really like about this, and again, providing this platform as we talk to the top, the idea of taking a look at ADHD with emotion starts to explain so much that our prior models didn't. It just seems to kind of line up, and what I really like here is what you've described. These things that you've talked about, almost every one of them I can link to something that as an ADHD coach we're trying to do. We're trying to teach people how to kind of calm down, how to pause, and different structures in order for them to shift their attention. So when they walk into a situation, they go, wait a second, I know this is, I can feel the stress, I can feel the emotion come up, I'm pausing, I'm catching myself, this is how I normally react. These are the types of things that I do need to do in order that have successfully calmed me down the past in order to control or redirect their behavior. And it's fascinating because just the way you've lined this up, it really, really kind of links in with a lot of coaching theories and a lot of things or tools that we do to kind of help facilitate this process.
Yes, it absolutely does. And as you know, this isn't just a good model for managing emotion. It's a good model for managing yourself, period. Even whether or not the situation involves emotions, these are just good self-control strategies that all of us can and should be using. And by making them more explicit, hopefully we allow people to capitalize on them even better.
Well, Dr. Barclay, we have covered what emotions are, the evidence of why we should be taking a look at emotions as a part of ADHD, and we took a look at the strategy at the end to kind of manage that. Is there anything left to be said that we haven't covered?
No, I don't think so. I think at this point, just coming back to this idea that emotion is a central ingredient to this disorder, and we need to focus on it and manage it as if it was a key component and not simply dismiss it as some other disorder.
I couldn't agree with you more, and that's hence the reason for you to be on the show. And Dr. Barclay, I'd like to thank you for coming on and sharing this with everyone. It's been very, very enlightening. And again, if somebody wants to get in contact with you, they go to russellbarclay.org, correct?
That's right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Barclay, and thanks, everyone else. Catch us next week for our next edition of Attention Talk Radio.